In the midst of a bountiful holiday season, the people of Southwest Georgia and the Florida Panhandle are struggling.
We're all hurting and we need as much divine guidance and guidance from government as we can get.
They're disoriented by the breathtaking extent of Hurricane Michael's destruction.
A lot of landmarks are just gone, and it's surreal. It's amazing how emotional you feel.
While we celebrate the holidays with friends and family, hurricane survivors say,
I feel like now that we've been forgotten.
For these people of Southwest Georgia and the Florida Panhandle, this will be a blue tarp Christmas. This is a special report from News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. I'm Pete Combs. Belinda Martin sits in her hurricane-damaged home in Callaway near Panama City, Florida, and listens to the rain. It's hard for her not to get discouraged.
Nothing is ever going to be normal the way we had it.
These days, she says, she's even afraid of the rain.
Last night, the wind started picking up. My back patio starts flying.
The rain reminds Belinda of what happened here October 8th. That's when this hurricane, Michael, came roaring ashore just a few miles south of Callaway with winds of at least 155 miles an hour. Sustained gusts were even higher. Despite the mandatory evacuation order that sent hundreds of thousands of people inland to seek shelter, Belinda Martin, her husband Ben, and their 24-year-old son Jackson decided to stay behind and weather this storm at home.
I prayed a lot. I mean, it was
brutal. Too busy to pray, too busy to think about what could have happened or what, you know.
I ventured out every so often to go look at it and go back in.
The family holed up in the safe room Ben built inside his garage a few years back. Ben and Jackson went outside at one point as the eye wall approached. What they saw and heard terrified them.
Above the roar of the 170-mile-an-hour plus wind came a train.
Yep.
We both looked at each other and we said, time to get in. And
Jackson, get your helmet on.
We all got in, got our motorcycles on, the face shields, some leather jackets and armor. We got in and hung it down. And then when it came through, it sucked all the air out of our lungs. We couldn't pop our ears. We couldn't breathe. The house was not shaking. It was broke. It was going like that.
Swiveling.
Yeah, swiveling, yeah. And everything was falling off the shelves and everything crap like that. And then it went away.
The Martins say that tornado came within 50 yards of their house, destroying homes, flipping cars, and killing at least one of their neighbors. There are thousands of stories like this. Russell Delavue kept his family home in Panama City as the storm roared across the coast. His wife wanted to leave, but he said no. She took the baby and ran into a back bedroom as the garage blew completely off its foundation in front of their home. After the storm passed, Delavue looked at the rubble in his small front yard.
What it is the remnants of a one car garage, had all my stuff in it, you know, tools, and we just used it as storage. And it was an addition to the house, you know, and it just picked it up and flipped it over right in front of the house.
And so what I'm looking at now is the roof of your garage right over there?
Well, actually, that's not the roof. That's the side of the garage. That's the left side. As you look at it, the garage is the right side of the garage.
Yeah.
The garage door is a little bit further down, and I'm not real sure where the roof is.
Jimmy Walker's story is even more horrifying. He heard a terrible noise as he rode the storm out in his apartment on the first floor of a run-down two-story building.
We went outside and looked up over above us, and everything above us was gone. And there was a lady trapped up there in the room, and we had to go up there and get her out of there. And when we got her out of there and everything, then all of a sudden the rest of it collapsed. And then we didn't realize the damages. And when we looked at all the rest of the other rooms, and the roof had caved in on all the people that was in the rooms and stuff that was in their beds, one lady moved out just in time. before the storm, because if she hadn't, she would have been dead.
No kid. Mr. Walker, was anybody hurt in there?
It was the one lady, she got punctured in her chest, like, that's the one that was upstairs, she was in the bathroom.
And you had to rescue her.
Yeah, we had to go up and get her out of there.
Cassandra Miller, her daughter, and her nephew all rode the storm out in their apartment.
It was intense. I didn't think it was going to be how it was, but I stay in Lynn Haven, and I just seen all the shingles and people's windows get busted out and cars' windows, just debris just coming all into the windows, and it moved my car slanted.
So, really? It moved your parked car? It moved
yeah,
it?
Yes, it did.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. What was the noise? It must have been incredible.
Oh, yeah. It was loud. It was just loud, and you could tell, like, her glass breaking and things bumping up against the apartment, and somebody actually walked their dog outside, and it got swept up in the wind.
The dog got swept up in the wind?
Yeah.
Kimberly Alls rode the storm out in her rented house in Lynn Haven with her 3-year-old son, Jeremiah.
The tree put down, the house.
Oh, my.
And the neighbor did help us.
Oh, the neighbors great. Helped
the neighbors
us.
Helped. That's
and
great.
The tree fell down on the house. That's yeah. right.
Was it scary?
No.
No? Why wasn't it scary?
The dog was in our heart.
Who was in our heart?
The dog.
Jesus, that's right.
It's been decades since this part of Florida, often called the Forgotten Coast, has felt the wrath of a powerful hurricane. Trees had grown tall. Residents had grown complacent. Some felt invincible. But for many, like Alonzo Williams of Panama City, that didn't last long after the worst of Hurricane Michael began to come ashore.
Did you stay here for the storm?
Yeah, I wish I hadn't. I've been here all my life. In this house right here, I said, well, it done made it through a bunch of storms already. And I said, well, it'll probably last us here, but I ain't never seen nothing like this.
What was it like being in the house?
Scary, real, real, real scary.
With memories like that still vivid whenever she closes her eyes, Belinda Martin says she doesn't get much sleep. Her husband Ben says at one point they just had to go.
We had to leave after a week. So
we were here 7 days afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Then we had to leave.
What made you have to leave?
Me.
Why?
She started having anxiety attacks, chest pains, and passing out. So I said, well, we're going to go.
I'm just in shock that, you know, it's just like, I just can't believe this happened to my city.
From here, flying in a Coast Guard helicopter above the storm-ravaged towns of Panama City, Callaway, Springfield, and Millville, the damage is breathtaking.
So we're starting to come into the area of Mexico Beach here.
Mexico Beach, ground zero, as Michael made landfall. This crew from Detroit is stunned. Coast Guard Aviation Maintenance Technician Brittany McDaniel.
Just to see the devastation on the land from up here is definitely heart-wrenching. I've never seen a hurricane in person before, so it's definitely quite different to see it in person versus, like, you know, news footage on TV. To have the smells hit you in the face when you're flying over it and stuff like that, it's rough. But I'm glad that we're here and able to help.
Lieutenant Cenk Nohm is the pilot of this Coast Guard HH-65 Dolphin helicopter.
So you can see what the amount of damage was done. I know there was a small amount of people that did stay and weathered the storm here, so you hope that they made it through all right. The full impact of this is really going to take a while to sink in, though, to be honest with you. I mean, today we're all just kind of just in shock responding to it, you know, doing our best to just provide the assistance that we can. I know for me it's going to take a few days for this to sink in of the magnitude of it.
Co-pilot Lieutenant Molly Smith is thinking about the people whose lives were normal October 7th, just one day before Michael roared ashore.
I mean, there's millions of people here that have to go through life completely starting over. It's crazy.
Even 2 months later, it still looks like this area was hit by a powerful tornado at least 20 miles wide. The winds from Hurricane Michael were initially clocked at 155 miles an hour. Just shy of a Category 5 storm. But like a lot of people around here, the Martins don't believe that. Even FEMA workers I've talked with say there were gusts within the storm of more than 200 miles an hour. Michael was the third most powerful storm ever to come ashore in the United States. The National Weather Service is now reevaluating that Category 4 classification for this storm. It might someday be rated a Category 5. That's what happened with Hurricane Andrew more than two decades ago. It was listed as a Category 4 storm for 10 years before being upgraded to a Cat 5.
The worst thing I've ever been through personally.
I'm driving through Bainbridge with Georgia State Senator Dean Burke. He's not a native, but he has been here for a lot more years than some of the trees knocked down by Hurricane Michael as it roared across the state line headed north and east.
This was like a tornado, but it was eight counties wide and lasted for 2 hours rather than 5 minutes like a tornado would coming through.
At the hospital where you're the medical director, you withstood the storm pretty well. You lost power, but how did you fare?
Well, from a patient care standpoint, we did well. The staff are our heroes. They came prepared to stay as long as necessary, so we had full level of staffing and then extra people in case they were needed. Physicians spent the night in the hospital to make sure they were available in case the drive to the hospital was blocked, and it ended up that it would have been for a lot of people. So from a patient care standpoint, we had no real issues. Not having power is a big challenge, though, from the standpoint of feeding our staff and the patients. And that was the number one issue we had, was just getting food to the patients, because our generators are focused on patient care activities and patient care areas. We've never had a power outage to go as long as this was, to the point where it was starting to affect our ability to feed people.
If we drive down the road, I mean, from where we sit right now, I see one blue tarp. I see some trees that look like they've got...
You see that sign that there's no sign there. You don't even notice it because it's just a frame. There used to be a big billboard there. It's gone.
Yeah.
That's been kind of interesting. The place you've been your whole life, a lot of landmarks are just gone, and it's just surreal. It really is.
How jarring is that for you?
Very jarring. It's amazing how emotional you feel. I have to go to Atlanta a lot with my Senate duties, and I've been out of town now probably four or five times since the storm. And when I get back, you know, your stomach does flip, so, it's hard to explain.
That's what happened 2 months ago in southwest Georgia and the Florida Panhandle. Now it's become clear Hurricane Michael has fueled an epic exodus from the Florida Panhandle and parts of Georgia. We'll take a look at that in just a moment. You're listening to a special report, A Blue Tarp Christmas, on News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.